Welcome to the Whole Hog Podcast.
My main concern is I just want to do the best damn job I can for the University of Arkansas.
I got a question for you, though, Scotty. Do you know that there's other players on our team besides Desi?
Whoever we had on the plane is all we need. Turn that damn jukebox. Turn it up!
Now, here's your host, Seth Campbell.
Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell joined via Zoom this time by Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon. We're going to be staying socially distant, but we are still going to be getting you ready for the Arkansas versus Florida game here on the Whole Hog Podcast. This is a hyped game for many reasons. One, because it's one of the few SEC games that's actually going to be happening as of right now on Saturday. I believe that there's three SEC games that are still scheduled to happen on Saturday. And besides that, it's the Felipe Franks Revenge Tour game. And then Florida also on top of the East for the first time in a minute. But all of that, guys, that still doesn't really underline one of the big storylines, which is the fact that Arkansas head coach Sam Pittman will not be on the sidelines after testing positive for COVID. So I'll pose the question first to you, Scotty. How big of a loss is it not having Pittman on the sideline?
Yeah, I think it's a fairly big deal. You know, a lot of those guys look to him for guidance and for, you know, just some little nuggets of wisdom throughout the game and for some encouragement. I think that's one of the great things that Sam Pittman brings is just like the little small things on the sideline, like the pats on the butt, the pats on the back, the you know, slapping your helmet, just telling you did a good job, you know, low fives when you come off the field, just little things like that. They're probably going to miss a little bit of that. And Sam Pittman's got like this, he's got like this unique, genuine touch. He's got like this genuine way about him. And I think that's going to be missed by, you know, not just the players, but some of the coaches too. I know he's really hurt that, you know, he's not going to Florida. And he said on Monday, I think that, you know, the hardest thing about this COVID thing is, you know, just not getting to go to Fayetteville to Gainesville with Felipe Franks. You know, he loves Felipe to death. He knows that, you know, Felipe's been tremendous for this offense, and he's given Arkansas, you know, a really good chance to win almost every week. And I know he's hating that. I know he doesn't want to be in his guest house all week long, but yeah, hopefully he'll be out sooner than later.
I think they just miss a calming influence when he's not there. I think that, you know, he does a really good job of just, you know, keeping the team kind of level-headed. We saw that in the Tennessee game, you know, when he kind of talked about going into the locker room and seeing that the team looked a little bit down, and he said, hey, guys, we're only down 13 points. You know, it's not like we're down 50. And, you know, so I think that there's a little bit of a calming influence that he has on the team. You know, certainly he's – do they have a more experienced coach than Sam Pittman? I think he's the oldest coach on their roster. And so, you know, there's that game experience that he has, and they miss that. And then, of course, there's an expertise there that he has with line play, not just the offensive line, but he understands a lot about the defensive line too. I think that gets overlooked a lot. I think he was an All-America or an All-Conference defensive lineman in college. And then he became an offensive lineman or an offensive line coach almost kind of out of necessity, I think, to get his foot in the door. And, of course, you know, he's made a great career of that. So, you know, I think those are the things they miss most with him being there. I think they've got a good, solid coaching staff. But he's the leader of the staff. And I think that's, you know, that's going to be tough to replicate this weekend, regardless of, you know, whoever's filling that role.
When you look at the sideline, though, you do have Barry Odom, who's an experienced coach in the SEC and played quite a bit against Florida when he was at Missouri. Matt, how big is it to have a guy like Odom with SEC coaching experience that's going to be taking over?
Oh, I think it's huge. I mean, think about it. I don't think you understand what it's like being a head coach until, you know, you've actually done it. You can kind of simulate it in practice and, you know, and maybe in the week getting ready for the game and all this different stuff. But, you know, actually being there and, you know, kind of you hear people talk about, you know, when the bullets are flying, you know, it's just a different deal. And you're talking about Barry Odom as a person who's had 50 games as an SEC head coach. You just can't, you can't replicate that kind of experience. And I think that's why they went out and got Barry Odom. Now, Sam Pittman will tell you it's just because Barry Odom was Barry Odom. But I think that, you know, there was a need on his coaching staff to have someone who had head coaching experience. And this was pre-COVID, because Sam Pittman had never had head coaching experience. I think Sam knew what he wanted to do. I think he had a vision for his program, but I think that there was also that need. And it doesn't matter if you're a 59-year-old head coach or a 35-year-old first-year head coach. You just need someone who's been in that chair and can kind of come alongside of you and give you tips and give you pointers. These are things that I've learned. These are things that I did well. These are things that I wish I would have done differently. And so that was pre-COVID. And then COVID hits and it just, you know, kind of magnifies the need to have someone with a head coaching experience, because we all knew this was a possibility. I heard Sam Pittman talking about this possibility, I think back as far as like April or May, that, you know, we've already decided that if I can't coach a game, Barry Odom is going to be the one who steps in and, you know, fills my shoes for that game. And so, yeah, I think it's huge having a Barry Odom on the staff, somebody with head coaching experience, and not just head coaching experience, but head coaching experience in this conference. I mean, he's been to Florida twice as a head coach. He won there 2 years ago. He's beaten Florida twice. And so that's something that's just invaluable. And I know Sam Pittman made the hire with COVID not in mind, but I just think that was just that the hiring of Barry Odom on so many levels has proved beneficial for this team. And, you know, this is exhibit number 17, probably.
Yeah, Barry Odom wins as a head coach. You know, I don't know if that disqualifies him from the Broyles Award or gives him even more.
He can be in the Broyles Award.
Beneficial. Yeah. I was just kidding because he's a head coach. Because he was a head coach for that one game. But Scotty, what do you think Barry Odom adds to the staff?
It's interesting. Like, it's so rare that, you know, your head coach is not able to play, but your interim coach has more head coaching experience than the head coach does. Like, that's pretty interesting to me. And I think, I agree with Sam Pittman. I think Barry's going to do a great job. Like, it's and the first game that he's stepping into is, you know, what is Florida, sixth in the country, top six team on the road. Like, that's nobody's envious of him, but I think he's going to do a good job. He's gotten these defensive guys to buy in with both feet. Like, they're all in, all aboard what he's doing on defense. And I think he's going to, you know, once he's up in front of the entire team, I think he's going to get the whole team to buy in. I think it's going to be, I think you're going to see a pretty inspired team on Saturday.
And I thought someone made a really, it was Dan Mullen, made a really good point during the SEC coaches teleconference yesterday. He said that, you know, in addition to the coaching experience, you know, the in-game coaching experience that Odom has, he said that one of the things that he thinks is most beneficial having him step in this role is that he has the experience and the know-how to continue the message that Sam Pittman, you know, wants to convey to the team. And, you know, so it's not just Barry Odom can, you know, handle some things in-game. It's also the fact that he has, you know, just that maturity about him as a head coach that maybe other interim coaches, if they step in, okay, we're going to do things my way this week, or, you know, maybe this is a way for me to audition for this job elsewhere. I don't think you're going to see that from Odom this week. I just think it's going to be a very smooth kind of continuous transition from what we've seen from them over the last several weeks.
We'll talk about a transition. The quarterback at Florida, pardon me, has had the transition from Felipe Franks over to Kyle Trask, now at quarterback for the Gators. And Felipe is making his return trip, a trip that wasn't ever going to schedule and really wasn't ever going to be on anybody's mind, front of anybody's mind, until COVID hit. Because, you know, Arkansas, Florida, two, you know, different trajectories, especially at the beginning of the year. Nobody thought that the only way that they could play would be in the SEC championship game. Nobody thought that was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, a pandemic hits, and Felipe not only gets a chance to play his former team, but gets to go into the swamp a place where, you know, if you look at some of the things that he's done there have been good, but he's gotten a lot of grief there as well, guys. There's the famous, I believe it was South Carolina game, where he had one of his best quarters ever in football, and he's hushing the crowd. Like, he's hushing the home crowd. So, Scotty, I give the question to you. How big is this game for Felipe Franks?
Yeah, I mean, we might have to ask him, but he's probably not going to give you, you know, the most honest upfront answer, tell you what's really on his mind. But it's going to be interesting for sure. I'm going to be curious to see if, you know, we've talked on and on just about how well he's played on the road this season. I think he's at 9 touchdowns, no picks, and his completion percentage is like way over 70%. And he's been so efficient, so effective, and he's, you know, against Mississippi State and Auburn, I get it. In Texas A&M, he played probably his best game on the road. But I'm curious. I'm wondering if he's, you know, you can say all week that you're going to keep your emotions in check. It's just another game. But I don't know. I don't know how much I'm really buying into that. But I think he'll go into it with a level head. You know, I think it's this storyline is a bigger deal before and after the game. You know what I mean? But I think during the game, it's just kind of another game, unless there's a guy on the defensive side who knows him pretty well that's yapping at him. You know what I mean? So I expect him to go in with a level head. He's a veteran guy. Like, he's not going to let some small petty things, you know, try to distract him or, you know, kind of take him away from what Arkansas's goal is.
Go ahead. There are some people that put out quotes from this week. Guys, you know, that was a question that basically every single Florida writer asked whoever they were talking to this week about Felipe Franks. And there's quotes out online if you want to go find them. But there were a few defensive guys that were basically saying that they were excited to be able to get to hit Felipe, because you couldn't hit Felipe when he was actually on the team because he's wearing a different color jersey and, you know, that's the quarterback or whatever. But they said that there was a little bit of trash talk between Felipe and between them on defense whenever Felipe was with the Gators. And they're ready to see if that can kind of be resolved. And so that's a pretty honest quote that, you know, we didn't really see from Felipe. And it's just interesting to see that maybe there is a little something there on the Florida side, and especially on defense. Matt.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'd be kidding ourselves if we said this wasn't going to be a big game for Felipe Franks, and that he's going to have to, you know, do some things about keeping his emotions in check on Saturday. He plays with a lot of emotion. You see that in games that aren't against his former team. And, you know, so you can only imagine that it's going to be magnified, you know, a certain amount going back to Florida, going back to Gainesville, playing former teammates and things like that. You wonder, would he have even transferred to Arkansas if Florida had been on the schedule? I mean, that's a question I've had, you know, I've kind of come back to a number of times this week, is that they weren't on the schedule. They weren't added until July the 31st, I think, is whenever they ended up putting Florida on Arkansas' schedule. And, you know, I don't think teams can block players from transferring anymore, but you just kind of wonder if maybe he had been steered in a different direction. You know, the thing that I'm interested to just see is statistically, he's not going to outplay Kyle Trask because they play in different offenses. I mean, Florida, they're throwing the ball on something like 56, 57% of their snaps right now. And they're a different offense. They don't turn around and give it to their running backs. They throw swing passes out to their running backs. You know, that's kind of their run game. Not to say that they won't run it, but that's kind of their run game. And, you know, but I do kind of wonder, you know, which of them leads their team better, because I think that we focus on Felipe, but I think there's probably something there for Kyle Trask too, that, hey, this is the guy that I was the understudy to, that I lost the starting job to last year, and now I'm the Heisman front runner. I'm on the number 6 team on the team in the driver's seat to go to the SEC championship game. Is there something there from Kyle Trask this week that, you know, makes it to where he's got to keep his emotions in check a little bit too? And so it's an interesting story. I just think back to last year. I was driving back from somewhere. I don't even remember where it was. But I was listening to the Florida-Kentucky game on the radio, and it's when Franks got hurt. And there was just this fear, and I think it was in it was Mick Hubert and whoever their color announcer is. It's like, you know, what happens for Florida now? That, you know, we have all these expectations, and now our guy is going out. And then, lo and behold, Kyle Trask comes in and leads 3 fourth quarter touchdown drives, and they come back and beat Kentucky and kind of keep their thumb down on Kentucky. So it's just pretty fascinating to see how things have changed over the course of 13 months. You know, who would have ever thought that those two and these two teams would ever be in this position?
Yeah, and Kyle Trask has been, like you said, Matt, front runner for the Heisman. He's been electric. And exactly like you said, he lost his job to Felipe Franks the year before. There was a quarterback battle, and Felipe won.
I don't know if he is the front runner for the Heisman, but he has certainly got to be
considered
high. I mean, you look at his numbers this year. He has almost identical and in some ways better numbers through his first, his first five games as Joe Burrow had through five games last year at LSU. It's uncanny, the similarities. And you think about Florida, they probably played a little bit better schedule than LSU played through five games last year, because LSU, I know they played Texas in the non-conference, but they probably had a cupcake, you know, thrown in there somewhere early in the season, and Florida hasn't had that. They haven't played Vanderbilt yet. And so they played some pretty good teams. Not the best teams. They played some teams with, you know, some leaky defenses like Ole Miss. But he's really good. Everybody talks about Arkansas being the surprise in the SEC this year. To me, it's the play of Kyle Trask is got to be one of the biggest surprises in the SEC this year. I thought he played well last year. I didn't see him playing this well, though, this season. And I think it really speaks to Dan Mullen and the way that he can develop quarterbacks. I mean, this is the guy as an offensive coordinator. He had Alex Smith at Utah as an offensive coordinator. He had Dan Mullen, Tim Tebow at Florida, Chris Leak at Florida, who actually had a pretty good career, and had Dak Prescott and Nick Fitzgerald at Mississippi State. He's coached some pretty good quarterbacks. And now you talk about Kyle Trask. He's up there as one of the best ones that he's coached.
Did we know that Kyle Pitts was this good last year too? He's got to be head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah.
For the Mackey Award this year, it's not really even been close.
Well, not just the Mackey Award, maybe the Biletnikoff Award. You know, everybody thinks the Biletnikoff Award is just for the best any wide receiver. It's for any pass catcher, and so. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Pitts win the Mackey Award and the Biletnikoff Award. I think everybody knew he was good, but I think that, you know, he's kind of like Trask. There's been a significant jump from last year to this year. I think he was, you know, probably considered one of the top tight ends in the SEC, but I don't know that anybody saw him being a top 10 NFL draft pick, and that's probably, you know, where he's heading right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's who I was going to get into next, going from Kyle Trask to Kyle Pitts. And the fact of you are right. This guy was not trending as a first round pick. Like you said, he might have been one of the better tight ends, and maybe somebody would have reached if that was a position of need for them on their team. But there are legitimately people that watch football and scout football are looking at Kyle Pitts and going, I don't know why you wouldn't spend a top 10, 15, especially if you're around there from the 15 to 20 range and he's still on the board, like, it doesn't matter what needs you have. You take him. He's really emerged onto the scene, but he might not play against Arkansas. He's dealing with a big hit that he had against Florida. Arkansas has shown on defense that they have had trouble with bigger tight ends. Jalen Weidemeyer at Texas A&M gave them some trouble. He would get in matchups against Clark. Hudson Clark in the secondary, which is obviously not what you want if you're Arkansas. Matt, I give it to you. How do you want to see the Razorbacks attack Kyle Pitts if he is going to play?
Yeah, I think they'd like to see him stay on the sideline on Saturday. That improves their chances if he can't play. I don't know how you play him. I mean, he's a mismatch. Do you put a linebacker on him? Well, if you put a linebacker on him, he's just going to outrun him. You know, if you put a corner or a safety on him, he's going to play the ball in the air, and he's probably going to beat him for the ball in the air because he's got, you know, 4 or 5 inches on those secondary type players. I don't know how you play him, and I don't think anybody has figured out how to play him this year. Go back and look at, I don't know if it was the touchdown catch or if it was the other catch he made against Georgia. I think it was the non-touchdown catch. It was just a kind of a jump ball up on the sideline, and he went up and took the ball away from three Georgia defenders, and it was incredible. It was incredible. It was one of the, I mean, you talk about the Treylon Burks catch and the Ohio State guy catch, you know, the touchdown catches that we've seen this year, some great ones. But that had to be one of the best catches I've seen this year. It's certainly one of the most underrated ones in that game against Georgia last week. And the thing that I think is kind of interesting is that in the Florida games I have watched, at least the ones that have been on ESPN, they keep coming back to this graphic and saying, you know, here are the highest paid tight ends right now in the NFL. And Hunter Henry's on that list, and there's, you know, two or three others. It's such a surefire thing that he's going to be a top 5-10 overall pick right now that you see these things showing up on the television broadcast of their games. And I don't know that I've seen that very much with players who aren't quarterbacks or maybe who aren't running backs. You think about the Heisman front runners this year. We were talking about that earlier, you know, maybe Mac Jones at Alabama and Kyle Trask at Florida. And there might be two or three others who are in that conversation, who are quarterbacks. I think if you get though outside of non-quarterbacks, you probably wouldn't find anyone this year who is playing any better than Kyle Pitts. He's just been phenomenal.
Yeah, I think Arkansas's best bet is Jalen Catalan. Like, I don't know who else on Arkansas's defense you would feel more comfortable with matching up with Kyle Pitts one-on-one. Like, if that is the situation, you probably feel best with Catalan. Really good ball skills, I think, and he's physical. I don't know. Like, I just don't know that there's another answer, to be honest with you. It's kind of like my thing is, it's kind of like with basketball. Arkansas was so undersized last year, but almost any time that Arkansas was playing a 6'10", 6'11", 7-footer, you know, you're putting a smaller defender on him and just trying to make things tougher and just being physical with him, you know, kind of get into his legs a little bit and wear him out a little bit. And that was the job of an undersized Adriel Bailey at 6'6". You know, talking football, like I think you put your best defender on him and you just try to find that best matchup. I don't know if there is a great matchup, but I think Jalen Catalan is your best option there, even though he might not even be 6 foot tall, but he's a bowling ball. He's physical. He's tough. And I think he's got solid enough ball skills. So we'll see. I think he's the best shot Arkansas's got.
How many games this year have we heard going into an Arkansas game? How do you defend this? You know, the Mississippi State game, my gosh, how do you defend KJ Costello, who threw Barry Odom found a way? You drop eight and you make him throw it underneath until he gets impatient and you pick him off. How do you defend Matt Corral at Ole Miss? Well, they figured out a way to do it and made him throw, what, six interceptions in that game. And so this has got the earmarks of potentially being, Barry Odom's kind of swan song, I guess, with the Razorbacks, you know, his finest hours. You know, if they can go out there and find a way to slow down Kyle Trask, and assuming that Kyle Pitts plays, if they can slow him down, how do you not give this guy the Broyles Award, you know, for the best, you know, non-head coach in the country? I think it's interesting that Sam Pittman has continued, even with COVID, has continued to take on all these head coaching responsibilities this week. He was on the SEC coaches teleconference. He did his radio show on Wednesday night. He'll do a media interview on Thursday. He, has continued to do these meetings with his staff members and with his players. And he's done that in order to take as much of that responsibility off Barry Odom as he can, so Barry Odom can continue to focus on a defensive game plan like he would do in a normal week. And so if he can slow down Florida this week, I don't know how you don't give him the Broyles Award, because every time that they have had that Arkansas has faced this test of how do you do this, how do you do that defensively, they passed with flying colors this year. Nobody's figured out how to slow Florida down. And if he can do that, there will be a lot of people. You know, Nick Saban will really be watching that game film, you know, preparing for when they see Florida and Atlanta in a few weeks.
this is just such a unique situation all the way around for sure. But Barry Odom has shown the willingness, if you will, to just switch up the defense to do whatever they can to stop the team that they are playing. Like Matt said against Mississippi State, it was, we're just going to rush three, drop eight, play in a zone. That worked out decently well, kind of the same scheme. I'm not a D1 coach, football coach by any stretch of the imagination. So to break down the nuances between them would be something not suited for me. But, you know, from the outside looking in, they kind of employed the same thing in their game against Ole Miss. But here against Florida, like, Matt is right. You look at this as a situation of, okay, we don't know what is going to happen, and we don't know how they're going to stop them. Last question here, guys, before we send it to break. Barry Odom has shown willingness to switch everything up. How do you, I know, like I said, I know that y'all aren't D1 coaches either, but how do you stop Florida? Do you employ the zone? Do you rush more people to make Trask uncomfortable? Do you try and cover them in man-to-man, which really hasn't been Arkansas' strong suit all year long? Or do you come up with something completely different that I'm not thinking of, Matt?
I think that dropping eight in zone has been what they go back to. You know, that's kind of their bread and butter play, or their bread and butter scheme, if you will. They're such a good tackling team this year that I think they're comfortable with, you know, hey, we're going to give you 3 or 4 yards, and then we're going to come up and we're going to make a tackle, and you're not going to get a lot of yards after the catch. And so it wouldn't surprise me if that's what you see from them. Florida is so good along the offensive line. You wonder, are you going to be able to get pressure if you bring, you know, four down linemen? I don't know. I mean, they're big. I think they're like 323 pounds they average as a starter, and they've got 4 fifth-year seniors starting on their offensive line. And so that's a, you know, it's going to be the third straight week that Arkansas is going up against a big physical offensive line. I'm really interested to see, you know, how did their defensive linemen hold up against that? You know, they're going to be pretty worn down, I would have to believe, you know, after going up against Tennessee and Texas A&M the last couple of weeks. But that would be my guess, is, you know, they just kind of go back to what they've done well this year. That's what they did against Ole Miss. That's what they did, you know, for most of the game against, you know, A&M. The difference against A&M was they were just never able to get to the quarterback. You know, they were able to get to Garantano last week from Tennessee, and the backups that they brought in, you know, at times. I thought they did a really good job. They changed it up at halftime last week, and they started bringing some more blitzes. If you watch the third and the fourth quarter of that game, they were doing some things where, you know, they would delay a linebacker and bring him on the blitz. Grant Morgan, there was a key third down in that game where Grant Morgan came on a blitz, and he didn't sack the quarterback, but he made him throw it too quickly and got them off the field. So that'd be my guess, is that, you know, they just kind of continue to do what they've done. You know, give Florida the underneath stuff and don't let them beat you deep.
Yeah, that would probably be the game plan, I would think. And one of the things that I think it was either – I think we talked to Eric Gregory and Zach Williams earlier in the week, and one of them said that he doesn't feel like – you know, Kyle Trask can obviously – he can throw it all around the yard if he wants to, but he doesn't – saw with his feet. He doesn't necessarily want – I don't think any defensive coordinator necessarily wants the opposing quarterback to just be able to stand in the pocket and with all kinds of time and – you know, be able to deliver balls without much duress on him. I think that's what we saw Kellen Mond do. Like, I think his uniform was it was cleaner after the game than it was before somehow. Like, he didn't hardly even get touched. But I think one of those guys said that he feels like Arkansas might bring a little bit more pressure, you know, for a quarterback than maybe in past weeks, just because they don't want, you know, the potential Heisman front runner to just stand in the pocket and deliver passes, you know, without much coming at him. So I would expect to see some exotic blitzes, some stunts and twists, just some things to, you know, just take his eyes away from, you know, just his receivers down the field. I think Barry Odom is going to have a pretty solid plan, but like Matt said, you got to tackle really well. You got to tackle really well in space. And, you know, Florida's not run the ball very well at all this year. I think they've run for 100 yards in just two games. Arkansas can't allow Florida to get going in the running game, because then it becomes what do you do? But I think Arkansas is going to have a pretty solid plan.
All right, good stuff there, guys. Really appreciate you joining us here on the roundtable portion. Don't go anywhere, though. So when we come back, we're going to have Nick De La Torre from Gator Country, the Gator beat writer. He is going to be talking to us about some Florida stuff. And then on the other side of that break, we're going to have these guys back on doing a little buy or sell action. Some good stuff to get into, guys, with the SEC play. I guess we're officially into the back half of the schedule, and you know, fingers crossed that we can continue to keep playing, as we've seen COVID really affect some teams this week. All right, well, we'll be right back here on the Whole Hog Podcast.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video on Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell joined by Nick De La Torre, Gators beat writer for Gator Country. Nick, big game for the Gators that they're coming off of, a big win against Georgia where they are finally atop the SEC East. Feels like they've been chasing Georgia for a few years now, ever since Kirby Smart got there, but they're finally at that mountaintop. Is there any chance that this could be maybe a trap game against the Razorbacks?
I think it would be tough just because of all the things around the game. Obviously, Felipe coming back. We talked to Brett Heggie, who was Felipe's roommate. And believe it or not, they used to have, like, wrestling matches in the pool of the place that they lived at. Like, those guys are nuts. That just shows you the kind of competitor that Felipe is. Brett Heggie's not a small human at 6'4", 6'3", and, you know, 320 pounds, and he's wrestling with them. So I don't think – maybe if it was Vanderbilt and there weren't these, you know, extenuating circumstances around the game, maybe a trap game. But it was definitely a big emotional win for Florida. And you know, the question isn't unwarranted. You know, did Florida expend all of that energy and maybe they come out flat? But I think just the fact that Felipe Franks is coming back will probably prevent that from happening.
Well, you mentioned one of the big storylines is Felipe Franks coming back to the University of Florida. Nick, you are familiar with Felipe. We've gotten him here at the end of his career at the University of Arkansas, where he's, you know, matured. He's seen a lot of things in the SEC. You've been familiar with him when he has been, you know, growing up and beating out the guy right now that is in the talk for the Heisman race, and Kyle Trask. He beat him out for a position job. What's it been like when you're covering Felipe and kind of the vibe around the team as he comes back to Gainesville?
Yeah, I actually met Felipe. He must have been 15 because his older brother, Jordan Franks, was a tight end that Florida was looking at. And I remember doing an interview with Jordan and being like, hey, who's that kid? And he goes, oh, it's my brother Felipe. He's a quarterback. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So talk to him then. It's been a roller coaster. So Felipe wears his emotions on his sleeve, and Florida fans, it's very hard to play quarterback at the University of Florida. The expectations, I mean, you go into to work every day and you pass three bronze statues of quarterbacks that have won Heismans. Like, there's a very high expectation, and Felipe didn't handle criticism well. I think it took him a while to get off social media, because he would, you know, turn his phone on and go on Twitter after games, and I said, that's not a place you want to be. You know, after a game where you threw 2-3 interceptions. So there was definitely some contentious interactions between him and the fans. I mean, he told them to shut up during a game, against South Carolina. I hope for his sake that time has passed, and I think some Florida fans are happy with the season that he's had. I hope he gets a good reception on Saturday. But, yeah, it was a roller coaster ride, I think, to say the least, with Felipe and the fan base.
Well, the guy that has taken over Felipe's position at Florida Well, he's done pretty well for himself, Kyle Trask. We mentioned a little earlier. He's definitely got his name in there for the Heisman talk this year. What have you seen from Trask and his maturity going from taking over for Felipe last year after his injury all the way to 2020 halfway through the season?
I mean, I think the biggest sign that I can point to is that Kyle Trask was ready when he got thrown in against Kentucky down on the road. I know that me, if I were 21 years old in a college town and I'm the backup quarterback, I'm doing a lot of other things than studying the playbook. And I certainly wouldn't have been ready. And I think the biggest thing you can point to in terms of Kyle Trask's maturity is that when he was thrown into that situation, he was ready. And that means even though Kyle and Felipe both came in the same spring, they both enrolled early. So it's not like Felipe beat him out once. Felipe beat him out every single year that they went up against each other. And a lot of guys, you know, especially quarterbacks, would have transferred. So I think it's a testament to Kyle's work ethic and maturity that he's been able to step in right away in 2019 and have this kind of season that he had. And then this year, really just putting it all together. And I think personally, Dan Mullen's offense is easy for quarterbacks. It's just coming down to making the right decisions, but they give you so many different options. And Florida has so many weapons on offense. I think it's really just, I know the term game manager can kind of be, you know, a slur for quarterbacks, but I think that's really what you're asked to be in Dan Mullen's offense as a quarterback. You're not asked to go and win the game, just make the right decisions and the right calls. And I think that's really where Kyle Trask is kind of excelling when he's making, you know, it certainly doesn't hurt to have Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney as your options, but he's making the right choices when, you know, when he has to make a choice on the field.
Yeah. Speaking of those weapons, you just mentioned two of them in Kyle Pitts and Toney. Pitts has shot up draft boards. A guy that, you know, was maybe, I mean, he was regarded as one of the better tight ends in the country before the season, without a doubt. But the way that he has played, you know, he's got people talking, people that watch football for a living, like talking that, you know, he could be a top 10 draft pick very easily, you know, saying, I don't understand why you wouldn't take him. What's the latest on his status? And then, you know, fill in the Razorbacks, because Pitts is such a highly touted weapon. Maybe some other people that you should be on the lookout in the Georgia offense as well.
Yeah, I mean, I remember first meeting Kyle his freshman year and thinking, you know, shaking his hand and thinking, I think he just touched my elbow. Like his hands probably make a football look like mine would make look like a baseball. So we looked at him just as a freshman and just thought, man, this kid's impressive. And obviously the season he's putting together with 8 touchdowns and 400 receiving yards, second on the team in receptions. Everything he does when he's touching the ball is great. But I think the biggest thing that he's doing and him and Kadarius Toney is they create for everyone else just by existing on the field. Because if 84 and 1 are on the field, the defense has to slide a safety over, slide a linebacker over to make sure that we've got at least one guy on Pitts. And now it's, okay, well, we're focusing on Kyle. Don't let Kadarius Toney get the ball in space because he can make people miss. And then I think that's where you saw all the wheel routes against Georgia open up, because now you've got a linebacker trying to cover a running back in space. And it's almost like Kyle Pitts only had 2 catches. One was a touchdown against Georgia. But when he was on the field, he's opening up everything else. And that's when you see guys like Damian Pierce, Malik Davis, and Naquan Wright. Those are really the three, you know, the three-headed monster for Florida in the backfield. And they really use them pretty equally throughout the game. And then you're asking other guys like Trayvon Grimes, who came back for this season, thought about leaving last year. Justin Shorter, a former 5-star receiver from Penn State. Those guys are starting to reap the rewards of everyone else focusing on Toney and Pitts. And then some of the other tight ends are even getting in the mix. Kamori Gamble's a redshirt junior, caught his first career touchdown against Georgia. So to me, that's really the thing, is that Florida has a bunch of guys who maybe aren't as talented as Kadarius Toney or Kyle Pitts. But when you have those guys on the field, now you've got advantageous matchups and one-on-one matchups for these other guys. And then that goes back to what I was saying about Kyle Trask, and you just have to make the right decision. Don't force a ball, which I would do. I would throw to Kyle Pitts if you had 11 guys covering him. But hey, if they've got Toney bracketed and Kyle Pitts being double teamed, there's a one-on-one somewhere. And that's where Kyle Trask really excelling, finding those matchups.
And I know coaches now are more tight-lipped than ever about injuries and people that are not there. But have y'all gotten any update about Pitts for this upcoming weekend?
Yeah, I mean, that was a vicious hit. That's an old school 1980s football hit that you saw. They used to do ESPN segments, you know, knocked up about that, and we don't see that anymore. He's going through concussion protocol. That's going well. We have heard that he possibly broke his nose on the hit. It did not require surgery, so that wouldn't hold him out. I'd probably say 60-40 that he does play. I think he plays. The person I work with doesn't think he plays. We were just chatting about that on our podcast. But yeah, like I said, even if you're out there and you pass all the concussion protocols, pass or fail, it's not like, oh, you're kind of okay. It's you can either go or you can't go. But even if Kyle Pitts is on the field and he's not in your game plan, like I said before, just having him on the field helps your offense so much.
All right, Nick, we'll wrap it up here on the Whole Hog Podcast. Let's switch it over. It's so easy to talk for hours about the Florida offense. Dan Mullen makes it very easy to do that. But switching over to the defense a little bit, you know, if there was a weakness in that Florida defense through the first game, I think first five games that you've seen from Florida, what would it be?
Yeah, so the first three games I made the joke. So I started covering Florida in 2013, and they have been historically bad on offense since I came. I'm surprised Gator fans haven't run me out of Gainesville. And then you see the offense, you know, clicking the way it was through the first three games, and the defense was historically bad. And I made the joke, you know, about the Avengers. And I'm like, Thanos, I'm like, listen, you asked for offense and it cost you everything on defense. But starting with that Missouri game, Florida's kind of turned it around, and their biggest issue was getting off the field on third down. And if you look at what being an SEC West team, you obviously had to cover and you got to see LSU up close last year. The book on trying to beat LSU was keep their offensive touches to a minimum. And if you can get a 12 play drive that eats up 8 minutes of a quarter, beautiful, because that's one less time that Joe Burrow and those guys get to play, or one less drive that they get. That's the book. That was the book on Florida, and South Carolina was able to do it. South Carolina had a 14 play, 11 minute drive down 14 in the fourth quarter. And it's just like, hey, well, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep Florida off the field, and Florida's defense was allowing it. So the biggest bugaboos for Florida's defense have been some secondary issues and then getting off the field on third and fourth down. And that's going to be the issue all year is, teams are going to try to keep your offense off the field, which means it's paramount that your defense prevents that from happening. So that's a big thing, I think, each and every week is getting off the field on third down.
All right. Well, Nick, really appreciate you joining us here on the Whole Hog Podcast.
Appreciate you guys having me.
All right, Nick De La Torre, you can find him on Gator Country. He is a Gators beat writer there on Gators Country. Don't go anywhere, because when we come back after this commercial break, we're going to do some buy or sell here on the Whole Hog Podcast.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell joined once again by Scotty Bordelon and Matt Jones. And gentlemen, it is buy or sell time. Five questions. You tell me whether you are in or out. And we will start with the man of the SEC hour, Sam Pittman, who is not going to be in Gainesville on Saturday, but he has been turning a lot of heads with what he has done with the Arkansas Razorback program this year. Buy or sell, we'll start with you, Matt. Sam Pittman is coach of the year in the SEC.
Well, I think we have to look at this a couple of ways. Number one, I think through six games, I think he should be the coach of the year. it's an incomplete picture, you know, still. I mean, things could happen to where they may finish the year 3-7. Who knows? But I think through six games and the way that, you know, they played versus the expectations, I think he could be. You know, the thing to remember, though, is that in the we saw this week with, you know, the SEC Soccer Awards that came out. They had co-head coaches of the year. It was G. Guerrieri from Texas A&M, and it was Colby Hill from Arkansas. And they were co-SEC coaches of the year because they were both coaches of the teams that split the SEC championship. Pay no mind that Colby Hill's team beat Texas A&M when they played head-to-head in October. So what we see from the SEC almost every time without fail is that the SEC coaches vote for the conference champion as coach of the year, right? I mean, you see it in track. Lance Harder's won 39 SEC championships at Arkansas. I'll let you guess how many SEC coach of the year wins that Lance Harder has. It's 39. So the SEC coaches, I think they're probably going to fall in line and they're going to pick whoever wins the SEC championship as their coach of the year. The thing I think that's more objective and to watch is what going to be what the media votes, the Associated Press. I think that's where you might see Sam Pittman win the coach of the year this year. So I buy that he should be the coach of the year through six games. I sell that he's going to be the unanimous coach of the year.
Yeah, I don't see how right now he's not the coach of the year. Like if the season was to end right now, it's not even a question. Arkansas should have four wins this year against SEC opponents, and it only had four wins over the last 2 years and only against non-conference opponents. Like the turnaround has just been – it's really been unbelievable just how – I know it didn't happen overnight, but it happened in less than a year. A program that was literally dead in the water, like couldn't beat, like had to have a 21-point fourth quarter to beat a Colorado State team at home. You get beat at home by a quarterback that you couldn't win with last year too. And now you should have won two games on the road in the SEC. Not just two wins in the SEC or three wins, but you should have two road wins. The turnaround has just been unbelievable, and it's been so refreshing to cover a competitive football team. I get asked about it, you know, just about every time I talk to family or in-laws. Like it's crazy, but yeah, I don't see how Sam Pittman would not be the coach of the year in the league if the season ended today.
All right, guys, moving on. Arkansas playing Florida this Saturday, November 14th at Gainesville. You look at the rest of their schedule as it plays out right now. Arkansas is at Florida, has LSU at home, has Missouri in Columbia, and then has Alabama at home. My question that I give to you, Scotty, is will Florida game be the toughest game on the Razorbacks' schedule this year?
No, they still have to play Alabama. But Florida's like 1B. You know what I mean? Alabama is they're still the team to beat in the league. Like Florida, I think if we've learned anything about them, they're the team to beat in the league outside of Alabama. Like they discarded Georgia. I know Georgia was far from full strength last week. Didn't have Richard LeCount, arguably their best defensive player, one of the best defensive backs in the league. But they still almost put up 50 points on Georgia. They're the team to beat in the league outside of Alabama. But no, I mean, Nick Saban's teams, that's going to still be the toughest game on Arkansas' schedule.
Scotty, are your dogs drinking water?
Yes. Yep. Boxer, she lapped it up.
I think, I think this is. I go back and forth on if it's their toughest game. I'm not convinced that Florida's just far and away a better team than Georgia. Georgia was without Richard LeCount. That was a huge loss for them in their secondary going up against a passing game. Like Florida and like Scotty mentioned, they had some other players out. Their quarterback got hurt early in that game. Stetson Bennett, they brought in DeJuan Mathis, and we all saw how he played against Arkansas. He's not going to be a quarterback that's able to beat a team like Florida. So you know, I think Arkansas played a good team in Texas A&M. They played Georgia. Scotty mentioned they got Alabama. I mean, if you want to go the total year, Alabama's the best team they're going to play. And I don't think that's close. I mean, Alabama looks like the most complete team in the SEC by, quite a bit. That's not to say that, Florida or Georgia might not, get them on an off night and be able to pick them off in Atlanta. But right now I'd go with Alabama as the toughest test. So I'll sell that.
Both of you guys selling that this Florida game is the toughest test for Arkansas, which makes sense because, like you said, Alabama is still on the schedule. Even though the Razorbacks get them at home, you still have to play Alabama, and Alabama looks like the far and away favorite in the SEC right now. But Scotty mentioned it a little bit, so our next buy or sell question is going to be, have the tables turned in the SEC East? Really, ever since Kirby Smart took over at Georgia, the University of Georgia has been the team to beat in the SEC East, going all the way from really a team that was in the middle of the pack, sometimes could push up under their previous coach, to they were in the college football playoff with Alabama at one point. So they were looking not only to be the powerhouse in the SEC East, but the powerhouse of the SEC. But has the guard changed for the next few years to where Ed, Florida is going to be the team to beat in the East? We'll start with you, Matt.
No, not over the next few years. This year, they're the team to beat because they're in the driver's seat to go to Atlanta. I mean, they've got one loss, and they've got a favorable schedule the rest of the way. Georgia's got two losses, and Florida's got the head-to-head win over them. So, it would be almost inconceivable for Florida not to make it to the championship game at this point. Over the next few years, they're going to lose Kyle Trask this year. And they're going to lose Kyle Pitts after this year. And they're going to lose that entire offensive line after this year. You look through their two deep, and there are a ton of, juniors and seniors, potential early declaring juniors on their team, who are going to be gone next year. And then they're going to have to rebuild. Whereas I think Georgia is just stocked they're like the White River with rainbow trout. I mean, they are stocked for generations, I feel like, at Georgia. So I think that Georgia's still the class of the SEC East. This is just a year where things haven't worked out for them, and they're not going to make it to Atlanta, and that's nothing to hang your head about because they've been there 3 years in a row.
Yeah, I would agree with Matt. I think Georgia is probably still like the king of the East. But I think unless Georgia finds out who its quarterback is moving forward, I don't think Stetson Bennett's your guy. Like, I don't think he can take you where you want to go. I don't think DeJuan Mathis is that guy either. Is it JT Daniels? Like, I don't think we've seen him really all that much. So I think Georgia, like Matt said, they've got a wealth of talent, but they've got to get that quarterback situation figured out pretty quick, because I think that's the difference in a few injuries. I think that's the difference in Georgia, just really not looking like itself against Florida, and then potentially, probably costing itself a trip to Atlanta.
All right, guys, moving on now to Arkansas's upcoming game against Florida, kind of beat all around it. So let's get to it. Is this a potential trap game? Buy or sell this being a potential trap game for Florida? Now, before you shake your head yes or no, I'm going to give you some facts. All right, Florida has come off years of being the doormat to Georgia. They finally get the victory over Georgia. Now, a lot of people think of a trap game as there's a game beyond that. Now, there is no really game beyond Arkansas for Florida, because if you look at the rest of their schedule,
forward to Vanderbilt next week, that's basically a bye week.
Yeah, you've got Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Tennessee left on Florida's schedule. But is there the possibility that this could be the letdown after them securing the SEC East or being the front runners? They haven't secured anything yet. They still have to win. Potential trap game, Scotty, buy or sell?
I'm selling it. I think Florida's going to be locked in for this game for a number of reasons. Like, unless they've been living under a rock, like, they understand that Arkansas is a team that's really, really improved. Over last year, they can't just go into the game and sleepwalk to a win like a lot of teams have been able to in the past. And they're going to be amped up to play Felipe Franks too. Like, there's no two ways about it. I don't think they're going into this game with a lack of focus, even though, you know, I'm sure they are pretty excited about playing Vanderbilt next week and probably only playing a half of football and getting rested up for Kentucky. But I think they'll be pretty locked in this week.
Yeah, I'm selling that too. I don't think there's any way they overlook Arkansas. Maybe if it was week one, maybe you get them, it's a trap game type setting. But, they're finally in the position where they wanted to be. I mean, Florida's players, unless they're a fifth-year senior, or I don't even know, let me go back. They haven't been in this position before. You know, I mean, when was the last time Florida played in the SEC championship game? 2016, is that right? 2015, somewhere in there? Well, it was 16. It was whenever they came to Fayetteville and Arkansas beat them. That wasn't even a good Florida team. So, you know, they're in the position that they want to be. I don't think they're going to be overlooking Arkansas. I think that, the Franks factor is going to play a pretty big role into their motivation this week. And then, like you said, I mean, next week is Vanderbilt. They're not overlooking Arkansas for something, you know, for a team that this is the worst Vanderbilt team ever. Let's be frank. I mean, that's saying something. They're really bad this year. Mississippi State ran for minus 22 yards against Vanderbilt last week and still beat them 24-17. That's a bad Vanderbilt team. This isn't a trap game for Florida. I think they'll be ready.
Nobody's taking the bait on the trap game. We'll have to see. I kind of tend to agree with y'all that, you know, sometimes when you get up there to the mountaintop that you can like take a deep breath and exhale. You're like, okay, we're finally there. But I think that Dan Mullen in Florida is going to have his guys going, all right, we can't exhale because we got here to the mountaintop. We have to stay here and really take advantage of the year that they've been given. The remaining schedule is favorable, as we've said, in the fact that they can make it to the SEC championship game. All right, last one here, guys. Buy or sell.
One other thing I would say is I heard Dan Mullen on Monday say that, you know, Florida's goal coming into the season was just not to beat Georgia. And it's the same line that LSU used last year after they went to Alabama and won. Like, their goal for the season was not to just go beat Alabama. Like, there's still a lot more to be done. They just control their fate now.
Yeah, good stuff for sure. All right. Last one, buy or sell. Now, this is kind of hard because you can't really see into the future and with all the unpredictability of COVID. But with how many games have been canceled this week or, pardon me, postponed, the schedule just looks so fluid. Could Arkansas's games, even if Arkansas doesn't get postponed one of their games because of their problems with COVID, could one of Arkansas's games get moved? Buy or sell that, Matt?
I'm going to put this on layaway. You know, like whenever you think about buying something, but you got to come back and buy it completely later. I think that there is a good chance that Arkansas could potentially have a game, say like LSU next week, maybe move to December the 19th. If you read, I think it was Dennis Dodd at CBS had a story this week where he quoted Ross Bjork, the athletic director at Texas A&M. Basically, there's discussion now among the ADs of using that December the 19th date, which is for the SEC championship game, to potentially play one of these games that's been postponed that can't fit into the December 12th makeup date. You know, basically, if two teams are out of contention for the SEC championship game, which Arkansas and LSU, you know, they would fit that bill, maybe that they push that game to the December the 19th, and they try to make up a game that involves, a team that is in the championship game discussion, like an Alabama. You know, maybe they play Alabama and LSU next week, and you know, maybe they move Arkansas and LSU to the week of the SEC championship game. So I think there's a good chance that something like that could happen. But what we don't know is, you know, what's going to happen to the games that are scheduled for November the 21st. And for November the 28th and December the 5th, are we naive enough to think that this is going to be the only week that the SEC gets hammered because of, you know, positive cases and contact tracing taking too many players out where teams can't play? I think you're just going to continue to see a lot of games get postponed over the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season. And so I think you're going to end up with something where, maybe Arkansas is fortunate enough that it gets to play all of its 10 games uninterrupted, but I think you're going to end up seeing teams who, may only get to play 7, 8, 9 regular season games this year. And there's just no way for them to make it up because they're going to run out of dates. They are not going to play past December the 19th, because on December the 26th, that's when the SEC affiliated bowl games begin.
Yeah, I think Matt pretty much covered it. And personally, I'm becoming increasingly pessimistic that the entire season is going to happen. You look around the entire league, like LSU, Auburn has paused activities, Texas A&M paused activities. All these games are getting just postponed, pushed back. And I'm thrilled that we've gotten through 7 weeks. Arkansas has played 6 games, but I don't know. My gut feeling is that, things might just get turned really upside down this next few weeks.
And the teams can do everything right. I mean, have you seen Sam Pittman, how tight he wears that mask during his football games? And I mean, this guy is doing everything he can to try to avoid it. And somehow he ended up, with the virus. And you've got a lot of players on these teams who are doing everything right, and they're getting knocked out for 2 weeks just because they have come into contact with someone who has, who's tested positive for the virus, whether it be because they were, reckless and didn't take the right steps to try to prevent themselves from catching it, or somebody who's, been safe and just happened to catch it, by some fluke. And so, it's inconceivable that the SEC is only going to have this 1 week. I feel like with it getting colder, I mean, this is the time where we all start getting, more sick and germs start to spread more. I just can't see any way that, the SEC avoids having more games that are, postponed or potentially called off at this point because of contact tracing. Contact tracing to me, I'm not gonna say it's the issue, because I don't feel like I'm qualified enough to, speak to the different, the severity of this virus and how it affects people and whatnot. But from a football standpoint, contact tracing is really the reason that we're not seeing teams play. LSU and Missouri, those are the teams that caused their games to not be played this week, right? Well, I think I read where I think LSU has no more than 4 positive cases and Missouri has like 2 positive cases on their team. The problem has been the contact tracing is so stringent that if one player gets sick, all of a sudden it's got the capability of knocking out 12 to 15 other guys on your team, and you're not going to be able to play when that's the case.
Something to keep an eye out on is Matt's talked about the games possibly being moving to December 19th of the week of the SEC championship game. I think that number one, like I said, when I prefaced this question, is we can't see into the future. So we don't necessarily know what is going to happen. But with the amount of cancellations that have happened this week, and like Matt said, are we naive enough not to think that this is going to happen some other times? If you even want to get in 9 to 10 games for most of these teams, I think you are going to have to utilize December 19th. But just something to keep an eye out on is the fact for the first time in a minute, the SEC championship game has moved back to the 7 p.m. time slot, 7 p.m. Central time slot. I think maybe 7 or 6. Anyway, it's at night either way, instead of being like at that 2:30 CBS mid-afternoon game. That way you can play games at 11 a.m. and not worry if you are the SEC about any kind of conflict taking away from your game at night in the SEC championship game. Whereas if you had it at 2:30, you could have the possibility of those games running into each other.
Other championship games are going to be played that day. So, ESPN and some of those are going to be, they're going to have inventory. But SEC Network, they're going to be looking for inventory. I guarantee you they'll take, an SEC football game at 11 and 2:30 if they can on that December the 19th. They got the alternate channel. They've got ways of getting this shown. I think that if the administrators from both the conference level and the universities, if they're comfortable keeping – their teams playing until that point, and I figure they will be because they all want to get into a bowl game and get a slice of that pie. I think they'll be comfortable playing December 19th. And I think you're going to see teams more than just the winner of the West and the East, Alabama and Florida, most likely. I think you're going to see other SEC teams playing each other that day.
All right, guys. Well, good stuff all the way through buy or sell. And good stuff also earlier in the podcast of the Roundtable. Really appreciate you guys joining us here on the Whole Hog Podcast. And we really appreciate you for listening. If you like the podcast, make sure to rate it, preferably 5 stars, and share us with your friends. It's a great way for us to grow and a great way for Razorback Nation to become informed. Well, for Scotty Bordelon and Matt Jones, I am Seth Campbell saying so long. We will see you back here next week.